Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 25, verse Satvena Brahmana Jana Tamas Andodha Amukyad Rajas Antara Charanaha Upari Gacchanti Satvena Brahmana Jana Tamasando da Amukyad Rajasan Karacharanaha Upari Upari, higher and higher. Gacchanti, they go. Satvena, by the mode of goodness. And Brahmana, persons dedicated to Vedic principles. Jana, such men. Tamasa, by the mode of ignorance. Adda, adda, lower and lower. Amukyat, head first. Rajasa, by the mode of passion. Antaracharina, remaining in intermediate situations. Translation, learned persons dedicated to Vedic culture, elevated by the mode of goodness to higher and higher positions. The mode of ignorance, on the other hand, forces one to fall head first into lower and lower births. And by the mode of passion, one continues transmigrating through human bodies. Purport, Sudras, persons in the mode of ignorance are generally in deep illusion about the purpose of life, accepting the gross material body as the self. Those in passion, ignorance, are called vaishyas and hanker intensely for wealth, whereas kshatriyas, who are in the mode of passion, are eager for prestige and power. Those in the mode of goodness, however, hanker after perfect knowledge. They are therefore called brahmanas. Such a person is promoted to the high material position of Brahmaloka, the planet of Lord Brahma. One who is in the mode of good ignorance gradually falls to the level of unmoving species such as trees and stones, while one in the mode of passion, filled with material desire but satisfying it within Vedic culture, is allowed to remain in human society. Text 22. Those who leave this world in the mode of goodness go to the heavenly planets. Those who pass away in the mode of passion remain in the world of human beings. And those who die in the mode of ignorance must go to hell. But those who are free from the influences of all the modes of nature come to me. Okay. Translation. Learned persons dedicated to Vedic culture, elevated by the mode of goodness to higher and higher positions. The mode of ignorance, on the other hand, forces one to fall headfirst into the lower and lower births, and by the mode of passion, one continues transmigrating the human bodies. Those who leave this world in the mode of goodness go to the heavenly planets. Those who pass away in the mode of passion remain in the world of human beings. And those who die in the mode of ignorance must go to hell. But those who are free from the influence of all the modes of nature come to me. So this is a discussion of the modes of material nature, or the gunas. Actually, the 11th canto, a large portion of it is very similar to the Bhagavad Gita, and that it contains a summary of all the Vedic knowledge. So we'll see in the Bhagavad Gita, we'll have a similar section on the modes of material nature. Of course, and Prakriti itself. In the previous chapter discussed here about analysis of material world into its elements. We'll find that also in the Bhagavad Gita. In the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita dedicated to jnana, we have an analysis of the material world and elements. We have an analysis of the gunas and the different aspects of human life characterized by the different gunas, different destinations of people, the different foods they eat, etc. So we'll find this similarly in the Bhagavatam. And of course, just as in the Bhagavad Gita, we have a discussion of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. So in the 11th canto also, we'll find these discussed. We'll find a more elaborate description of Karma and Jnana in Astanga Yoga here actually than in the Bhagavad Gita. And similarly here we'll find the discussion of the modes is a little more detailed than in the Bhagavad Gita. In any case, the conclusion of both the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam is the same. That is, above Prakriti is the Supreme Lord, and of all the different processes of karma, jnana, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga is the supreme process. So that is the conclusion of 11th canto here, and of course the Bhagavatam in general, and of the Bhagavad Gita. So, of course, ultimately, it is not necessary to go into detail to discuss about karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga for devotees if one already has faith. But Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are dedicated to presenting the whole of the Vedic knowledge, so therefore they present all of these things. And at the same time, they wish to attract people who have different interests other than bhakti if they don't have faith, so therefore they put these different things in. So, that is why we have all these different topics other than simply Krishna everywhere in the Bhagavatam. We have all these other topics to make the work complete as a Vedic compendium of Vedic knowledge. So, here we have a discussion of the gunas. So the gunas were connected with the material world, sattva, raja, and tamas. They are innate or inherent in Prakriti. But they do not manifest until Prakriti begins to transform into the various elements. Of course, Prakriti is also an element, but it is invisible, undetectable, until the Supreme Lord wishes it to manifest into lower elements and material universes. So therefore, by the wish of the Lord through his glands, Prakriti evolves into Mahatattva and eventually into all the gross material elements and the senses and the sense objects and the sense devatas. And this way we get the elements of creation which join together to create universes, and within the universes Brahma appears and he creates planets and he creates bodies, and then the jivas enter the bodies and they do activities in this material world subject to karma, and they go birth after birth in the material world until the life of Brahma is over. Then everything disappears again and turns back into Prakriti. And then it comes out again, and the whole thing evolves again into many universes and many Brahmas and many jivas, etc., with bodies. So, the gunas manifest within Prakriti at a certain point. In fact, with manifestation of Mahatattva, the first visible or perceptible aspect of matter, we will find sattva-gunas prominent. This is when the jivas are injected. And the Lord says, okay, we're going to start transforming Prakriti. So he puts the jivas in the matter, and we get Mahatattva. So this is a sattvic, predominantly a sattvic state, and it's considered to be glowing with knowledge, with consciousness. So the Prakriti at that stage is not a covering influence. It's a very, very subtle covering. So the jiva's consciousness is very prominent at that point. And it is said to be sattvic. This gradually transforms into a rajasic state called sutra, and then into a tamasic state called ahankara. And then ahankara divides into sattva, rajas, and tamas, and from sattva ahankara we get mind, from rajas we get the senses, and from tamagun we get the gross material elements and the sense objects. And that, then we have all the elements there. So in this way, the gunas are inherent within Prakriti and manifest by the will of the Lord and are responsible for the evolution of the elements in the material world from subtle, that is mind, to gross, that is five gross material elements. All this is under the modes of material nature. So they combine together all these different elements and they create bodies for the living entity and planets for the living entities and all objects of enjoyment for the living entities in the material world. And so, consequently, everything in the material world is made up of gunas. They're the primary qualities from the top to the bottom. So, why do we have gunas? To have variety. Just as we could have one color in the world, everything's black or everything's white, but we wouldn't see anything and we couldn't enjoy anything. So similarly, if we have colors, then we can distinguish things very nicely and get some enjoyment from that. So therefore, the supreme world is made matter in such a way that it is full of variety. So guna, of course, means quality. So by the mixture of gunas, we get various qualities or various tastes in the material world, so the jiva can experience these various tastes. So the gunas are classified according to their qualities. So we have, of course, here in this chapter, all these qualities discussed and their effects upon the jiva. So according to the mixture of these qualities, we'll get different things. Now, there's no pure guna in the material world. Everything's a mixture. Some would say that person is sattva guna. He's not pure sattva guna. There's a mixture of tamaguna and rajaguna somewhere in there also. But sattva guna is prominent. So a brahmana is sattvic. That doesn't mean he's all sattvic. He's got some rajaguna and tamaguna, but he's prominently sattva. So that's the stable condition. Whereas a person is tamasic, it doesn't mean he has no sattva, but it's very, very little. And no raja, no, he has some, but it's little. So that means tamas is prominent in that person. So it's not completely tamasic, but it's majority. So when we have a majority of one guna, then we say that is sattva guna or raja guna or tamas guna. So here it is describing that brahmanas are generally in sattva. And they have a little tama and rajaguna also, because they're not 100% pure. And by that sattva, they go upwards. And where do they go? They can go to higher planetary systems. Svargaloka, Mahajana, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. These are the higher planetary systems. If one is tamasak, in the Varnashram system, the Sudra is considered tamasic. But the arrangement of the Varnashram system is such that it restricts the Sudra so that if he follows the rules properly, he does not degrade. He does not go downwards. He elevates upward birth after birth. And he becomes rajasic and then finally sattvic. So it's a possibility of changing bodies, and changing family, etc., and gradually elevating himself upward. If he does not follow those rules, then that person in tamaguna will go down, as in this verse. Down, 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 down. If one is very fixed in tamaguna and refuses to follow the rules, this means he operates with no intelligence because he's in the mode of ignorance. He cannot distinguish good from bad, right from wrong, sin from piety or anything. And therefore all of his acts end up very sinful, and consequently he degrades in the material world. Then we have the intermediate guna called rajaguna, the mode of passion. So this, of course, is also similar to tamaguna in the fact that there's a lot of ignorance there also. But we know that rajaguna is a very active guna. Tamaguna is an inactive guna, lazy, inert. Rajaguna is very active. Of course, we can't say they're in knowledge. No, they have ignorance and desire, great desire for enjoyment, and very, very active. So consequently, they do lots of activities in the material world. Because they're very active also, they have active intelligence. So they have a greater intelligence than the people in tamaguna. And therefore, if it's for their benefit, they can understand, I should do this rather than that. So in one sense, they can discriminate. If it's for their benefit, they'll do that. Tamaguna, they can't even do that. And so they don't know what is good for them or whatever. That is why they destroy themselves generally. So those in rajaguna have a little more intelligence and they can distinguish things and do for their own benefit. Consequently, they can follow rules and regulations in order to get their goals. So we know that in the material world, everybody, not everybody, but there's a majority of people who are willing to sacrifice a lot to get something. They'll work day and night to get money. And they'll dedicate themselves to it. Even though they don't like to do it, they will do that because they want to get the money. So this is a rajasic state. They can dedicate themselves to something. And they'll follow rules to get it. They'll follow the rules. They won't steal. They'll work hard and do everything nicely to get the result. So that is a rajasic state. So because they can follow the rules to some extent, and they can distinguish that if I do that, it's not going to be good for me, and I'll suffer. And they, so some degree, they can distinguish sin and piety, etc., if it's for their own benefit, then they will, they won't degrade themselves to the extent that the tamogun people do. So that is why it says, antara charena, they kind of wander around in the middle. They don't degrade, they don't elevate, they kind of wander around in the human species, and they don't go downwards like the tamogun people. So, if such persons, tamogun or rajugun, people get the opportunity to get into the varnashram system, then they can go upwards. If they don't, generally they stick in that same category. The tamasic go down, the rajasic wander around in the human species, etc. like that. But if they follow the rules of varnashram, these groups can gradually elevate to sattva-gun. So this is the purpose of varnashram, get everybody to the sattvic level. So what is sattva? In the Bhagavad Gita we will see sattva is praised above the other gunas. Ultimately, of course, Krishna condemns that also. He says rise above the three gunas. But as far as gunas are concerned, he says sattva is better than the other two. And he gives it why also. He says why? Because the quality of sattva guna is one, prakasha, revelation, or knowledge. This doesn't mean material knowledge. This means actually we can distinguish atma from body. So this is one quality of sattva guna. The other quality is happiness, which means not gross material happiness, but contentment with very little material stimulation. In other words, we get happiness within rather than without. So this is the quality of sattva-gun. So one can control the senses and the mind, etc., very easily in sattva-gun. And one can understand the difference between body and atma. So this is preferable to rajagun and tamogun, where the distinction between atma and body is nil. This is preferred. Why? Because with this sense control and with this realization of atma, one can progress spiritually and get out of the material world and stop the bondage of karma. And in rajagun and tamogun, one cannot do that. So in other words, sattva-gun is a step towards spiritual life. If we see here later in the Bhagavatam, it will say that actually jnana, which is distinction of body and atman, this is part of sattva-gun. So jnana actually is only sattva-gun. In itself, it cannot give liberation. Sattva-gun can only lead to sattva-gun. It cannot lead to liberation. So jnana in itself cannot give liberation. So on this basis, then, acharyas say that bhakti can give you liberation, but not jnana. So the jnani who wants liberation must also do a little bhakti, and that will give him his liberation. So sattva-gun processes are therefore limited also. They can get you up to brahma-loka or whatever, but they cannot actually liberate you in themselves. So one needs a little bhakti also to get that liberation. So in this way we have the gunas. So the whole purpose of this exercise of discussing the gunas, of course, is one is to get people educated to understand the nature of how the material world and the people in it operate. And the other is to conclude that finally, as we'll see later in this chapter, bhakti is beyond everything. It is beyond the gunas. So whereas rajagun is karma yoga and varnashram, etc., and sattva-gun is jnana, then bhakti yoga is beyond the gunas. It is nirguna. So bhakti is the process that can get us out of this material realm completely. Not jnana, not karma yoga. So we'll see that later in this chapter where it praises bhakti as being beyond the gunas.
Actually, that's said in the next verse also, which I just read, that people in the mode of goodness go to Brahmaloka, people in Rajagun stay in the material world as a human being, those in Tamagun go downwards and get hellish punishment or go to lower species. And those who are free from the influence of the most material nature come to the Supreme Lord, Nirguna. So then he describes Nirguna. What is that Nirguna state? That is bhakti. That is the only process which is Nirguna. So jnana is not Nirguna, it is sattva-guna. And karma yoga is rajaguna. So they won't get you out of the material world. Bhakti is Nirguna, it will get you to the Supreme Lord. The other process won't. So we say, well, with jnana we get liberation, we can also get out of the material world. What I said is, no, it is sattva-guna. Cannot get you out. The jnani also has to do a little bhakti, and a bhakti allows him to get out of the material world. And therefore, the Bhagavan says that if you neglect the lotus feet of the Lord, Yujmadangraha, then patanti, you fall down. So even the jnani who labors to get his liberation, he may think he's liberated. No. If he neglects the lotus feet of the Lord, then cannot get liberation at all. He falls from that position. So the real jnani must also have bhakti. So, of course, it is not a lot of bhakti, but at least he accepts the position of the Supreme Lord. And if one doesn't, one says the Lord is maya, the Lord's body and the form are material, then no liberation. You cannot get liberation. So, Brahmavadis who offend the Lord cannot get liberation. Who say that Krishna is Maya, etc., then they cannot get liberation. That means Mayavadis can't get liberation because they offend the Lord. Or Shankarites. Others who are just neutral, they don't want to offend the Lord, they can get liberation. So we have Brahmavadis in that class who don't. And of course, the more fortunate are the Brahmavadis to get association of devotees or the Supreme Lord, and then they become devotees. It's also that position. So we have the Kumaras who are Shanta Bhaktas, and we have Sukadeva, who became a great devotee in Madhurya Rasa. And though he was actually a Brahmavadi to begin with, by the mercy of Krishna, he became and Vasudeva, he became a great, great devotee of the Lord. So, it is not that one's fate is sealed once one becomes a Brahmavadi, he can also change by the mercy of Krishna and devotees. But in any case, if the Brahmavadi wants to get liberation, yes, he can get it, but he cannot offend the Lord. He has to depend on bhakti to get that liberation, not upon jnana. Because it is said in Bhagavatam, Canto 11 also, that the jnani, at the point of liberation, must also give up jnana. Because it is sattva-guna, it is a bondage to the material world. So then what has he got left? Only that little bit of bhakti. He does not give that up. So that gives him liberation. And then he merges into Brahman at that point. So, therefore, the whole point of all of this for the devotees is that to understand that all the other processes are in the gunas, and bhakti is the process beyond the gunas, and even if the devotee does activities in the material world, those activities are bhakti, therefore they do not cause bondage, but they destroy bondage, and we get out of the material world. So that, of course, is stated in Nectar Devotion. The first characteristic of bhakti is kleshagni. It destroys all karmas. It destroys ignorance, ahankara, desires, and everything. It destroys all of these things. Why? Because it is nirguna in its nature. It has no gunas. So therefore, it destroys all the gunas and everything involved in the gunas, including ignorance and all this. So therefore, the whole idea here is to glorify the process of bhakti and to glorify the Supreme Lord and the devotees who are beyond the modes of material nature. So if we don't accept all this, then instead we have to wander in the material world as a jnani or a karmi, or less than that, not even a karmi or a jnani, as a yavana or a mlecha or whatever, who are not even following the varnashram system. So, better than just wandering around aimlessly, better to follow a system. So we have the Varnashram system to regulate everybody in the gunas and bring them up. So why can't we follow that system instead?
The answer is given at the beginning of Bhagavatam that no, the process in Kali Yuga is simply do bhakti. That is all. And of course, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, we'll find the same thing. Huh? Give up all dharmas and simply surrender to me. Huh? So yes, the processes are recommended in the Vedas, and they are followed in other yugas for people that don't have faith. Let them follow the gradual process of karma and jnana and yoga. But in Kali Yuga, no, it's not going to work. So therefore, the process is bhakti. And this also, of course, Lord Chaitanya says, Harinama eva kevalam, nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. Nothing else, nothing else, nothing else. No karma, no jnana, no yoga. Only the process of bhakti and chanting the holy name. So in Kali Yuga, the gradual process of purifying yourself through karma yoga is not going to work. The same purification will take place through bhakti yoga because it is nirguna. But of course, more than purification, by performance of bhakti, we also attain prema. So that's the real goal for the devotee.
Okay, any questions?
How much bhakti is required?
The elaboration?
Yes.
No offense to the Lord.
Because, you know, we can say that Arjuna was in the mode of passion because he's a chatur.
Yeah, but that's only a lila. He's actually Nijasiddha, so he has no gunas. He's playing a role. Krishna's also kshatriya.
Well, in the Bhagavatam, it must be coming up, or there's a discussion about bhakti also influenced by the mode.
Oh, yeah, that's right next here. There's people who have bhakti, but they're in the mode of ignorance, you know, and those are in mode of passion. So it's bhakti in the mode of passion, ignorance in the sattva. Those are mixed bhakti. Yeah. Then we have pure bhakti.
So, but you know, we know that individuals have propensities.
When they come,
we were reading last night, you know, that a person should take guidance of a spiritual master who's aware of the personal nature of the candidate, and that will take into consideration the influence that they have based on the notions of adventure.
Yeah.
And then they'll be managed in bhakti. So, you know, at what point then, but Prabhupada says it's just the intention. If the intention is there to serve Krishna, please Krishna, then bhakti.
Yeah.
So it can be the same activity as before, if they're doing the same thing. They're doing it for themselves.
Yeah,
there's not that much difference.
No, it's bondage. It creates bondage.
Yes. So, and then sometimes we hear that you have to come in a mode of goodness to be a devotee, to perform bhakti.
Not really. No, that's not true. We can start anywhere. So Krishna says women, Vaishyas, and Sudras can do bhakti, and even Mlechas can do bhakti. So it's not that you have to start with sattva guna to do bhakti. You start anywhere. But in the process of bhakti, we transcend all the gunas, including sattva guna. Because it destroys all the gunas, it destroys karma, it destroys pap bija, it destroys avidya. So automatically, the process of bhakti destroys everything. So we go beyond goodness. So our process of bhakti is not to get to goodness. Otherwise, we're going to end up in Brahmaloka. Or Svargaloka. That's not what we want. That would be the process of, let's say, mixed bhakti. Karma Mr. Bhakti may do this. He may go through that process of going up there. But even Krishna will give the Karma Mr. Bhakti more than that. He will give them Salokya, at least. Karma Mr. Bhakti. Ultimately, he will get them up to the more than the Gyanis and the Yogis. He'll give them more than liberation. But still, it won't be the best thing. It'll be Salokya without Prema. So that's not such a good position either. So therefore, we're advised to do pure bhakti now. Now, we may have coverings, like we have the Rajaguna and the Sattvaguna bhakti or whatever. It's not the bhakti which is so impure. It's actually the coverings on the jiva, which are so strong, which contaminate us, so that when we do the bhakti, we also have bad intentions and whatever. So we may have tamagun intentions, then it becomes tamagun bhakti, etc. So that's a very inferior type of bhakti in one sense. And it says here that if you have sattvagun bhakti, then you can go to Brahmaloka or whatever, I think, later on here in this chapter. Let's see. I just read that somewhere.
Anyway, the idea is that, yes, when we're in as devotees, we are presented by the good fortune of Lord Chaitanya and our acharyas and Prabhupada with pure bhakti, which is defined in the very beginning of nectar devotion. So we know that we're not supposed to have these desires for liberation or material enjoyment or svarga loka or whatever, all this stuff. So at least consciously, we're not praying for those things. We may have some subtle desires in our mind, of course, because we're not pure, but at least we're not praying when we chant Hare Krishna, let me get svarga loka or let me get liberation. You know, we know it's all offensive and it's mixed, so we reject that. Yeah? So in that sense, our sadhana is not pure, but at least we're following the process of pure bhakti. Huh? And through that, we gradually go through anartana vritti and come to nishta ruchi asakti bhava and prema. And then it does become pure at that point. Huh? So that is superior to the process where people don't have this idea of pure bhakti and instead may have karma mr. bhakti or gyan mr. bhakti. They have a slight tinge of these things in them. And they don't want to give them up. So it's better than that. Huh? And of course, inferior to that are the people that want liberation but will do a little bhakti in order to get the liberation. So the Lord gives them that liberation. Inferior to that is the person that wants liberation, doesn't do bhakti. He doesn't even get liberation. stays in the material world someplace. Or the karmi also. Yeah, he'll stay in the material world. So we've got various levels of bhakti and amounts of bhakti. When it's very little, then we don't call it bhakti, but it must be there even in jnana to get liberation. We don't call that bhakti. He's not a bhakti, he's a jnani, but a little bit of respect for the Lord is there. Or in karma also, they must respect the Lord. If they don't respect the Lord in the Varnashram system, it doesn't work. But it's not majority. They're not doing, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, and all these processes in a very major way. So we don't call that bhakti. So when it becomes a major process, then we call it bhakti. And if it's mixed, we call it mixed bhakti. And if it's rejecting these things, we call it pure bhakti. And everything leads to different destinations.
Okay. How do we tell if a person's bhakti is pure?
At least we should read Nectar Devotion and accept the the definition and try to do that. You know? In other words, we should understand that our goal is not to go to, you know, merge in Brahman and not to go to Svarga Lok or Brahma Lok or get material assets in the material world. That we're actually trying to develop unconditional love for the Lord. At least we should understand that's our goal. So in one sense we can say that's our goal, we understand what the goal is, even if we're not there yet. At least we understand the goal. And if we don't understand that goal, we don't get that goal. We get something else. And according to the goal, we go to that thing. So we have to define the goal first and try to get there. So if we accept that goal, then we call that pure bhakti. Even if it's sadhana, it's not, we're not pure, but you know, we're accepting that goal. And we're consciously trying to avoid these things. Yeah. So that's why Uttama Bhakti is considered to be sadhana, where we still have impurities, we go through an artana vritti, we still have gunas or whatever afflicting us sometimes, and then we get through, you know, bhava and prema. So when we get to prema, then it is really pure. And bhava is almost pure, 99% pure. And then below that, of course, we get various degrees of purity, but we still call it Uttama Bhakti because we have to go start from somewhere. And this is the condition which leads us to that. And if we have another condition, it won't lead us there. Yeah? So that condition of sadhana which leads us to prema will be called Uttama Bhakti also. But it is sadhana.
And the prime motive is to please Krishna.
Yeah. Whereas in the other ones it's always a mixture or else less and less and less of that and more of something else.
No.
You look in Bhagavad Gita, it says, those who are in the mode of goodness worship devatas. If they do it properly, they're following scripture, and they do it without attachments. They do it as duty. Then they're in the mode of goodness, actually. And if they start mixing in, of course, fruit of things for it, then it becomes more passion. It goes in the mode of passion that way. But worshippers of devatas also in the mode of goodness because they're following scripture, and if they become detached, then it becomes mode of goodness. Well, he's a guna avatar, so we can't put him in the same category. He's empowered by the Lord. We say he's in the mode of passion because he creates and everything like that, but we can't condemn him at the same time because
He can see the Lord. He gets instructions from the Lord. So obviously he's not like a Rakshasa who is in the mode of passion here. So he's in actually in a very high state. And in fact, he's head of our Sampradaya. Well, we can say in our case, yes, because we'll look in the previous in the Bhagavatam, I think Canto 2 it is, or 3. There he says, you will be free from bewilderment in your lifetime. So our particular Brahma got the promise of the Lord, he'd be free from any bewilderment. So Brahma Mohan Ali is considered to be only a Leela of the Lord, and he wasn't really bewildered, but it's the Lord will that this happen. So no will. But that implies also that if he doesn't get the blessing of the Lord, he could fall into some bewilderment. He's not absolutely pure. But he's a very elevated devotee.
What are the main things that take someone away from the path of bhakti?
Aparadhas, basically. Aparadhas usually caused by bad association. So offense is the greatest culprit, we can say. especially the Vaishnava aparadha, because this weakens the bhakti. And when it weakens, then of course that means faith is less, so inclination to do it is less, and therefore the possibility of progress becomes nil, because we want to do less bhakti and less bhakti, so then we can't progress. And if we do less and less, then the influence of Maya becomes more and more, consequently. That's the usual thing. So in some cases, we may get not aparadhas, but maybe from previous lifetimes, or even in this lifetime, some anartha may suddenly manifest, and that may cause obstacles also. Yeah, or Vishnu, like that. Yeah. So he accepts that. So that is why it said that even the Gyanis worship, you know, they worship Vishnu. Yeah. But if they have the wrong conception, they think he's a Devata, then they don't get liberation.
What is the destination of
two things. Of course, he's considered superior to the Gyani in one sense, because there's a little more prominence of, or an acceptance of, Vishnu there, and the process itself is a little more effective than Gana, but most of the Ganis, due to association, will prefer liberation to going to the spiritual world. So therefore, when they perfect their sadhana, even though they meditate upon Paramatma, whatever, and accept him, at a certain point they also reject, because they want liberation, sayuja. So they emerge in Brahman, and they emerge in the effulgence of Paramatma, or they emerge into Paramatma instead. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam that says that the yogi, unfortunately, after seeing the Lord, rejects him and goes for sayuja instead. So that is their position. And of course, if they get association, then they can progress, and they can get either yoga Mr. Bhakti, or they can get pure bhakti also if they get good association.
Can they get a neutral relation?
Well, if you do mixed bhakti, like Jnana Mr. Bhakti or Yoga Mr. Bhakti, then one can come up to Shantarasa. Mm-hmm. Right? When it's Karma Mr. Bhakti, one will get Salokya, Sarsti, and things like this, where one can get a nice position in Sarupya in the spiritual world. And if one gets a little Jnana in there, one can come up to some weak Shantarasa.
People in the mode of passion coming to human species.
Yeah.
So if you see the higher species like demigods and all, once they finish their fighting, they come to the human world. Mm-hmm. So does it mean from the mode of goodness they are coming to the mode of passion?
Not necessarily. It is said that the demigods actually, when they fall from Svargaloka, go to what is called the Svarga on earth, that is the other Varshas in our Bhumandala. We have other Varshas around, clustered around Mount Meru, and they are considered like Svarga almost. So many of the people that fall from there go to there, which is rather a sattvic state also. So it's not necessarily they fall right down, but they come down to earth and they have some sort of heavenly type enjoyment there also. so that they don't go to hell or anything after they fall from Svarga. But, you know, they exhaust their piety and they come back to earth, and there's a gradual transition.
No.
Most of them go together. In other words, living on the same planet, all of them will get that, because if you get Sarupya, you're going to be in the same planet, not on by yourself. You'll be on the same planet as the Lord if you got a Vishnu-like form, and if you have Sarsi, the power of the Lord, you'll still be in Vaikuntha. But you won't have an intimate relationship with the Lord, that's all. So Samipya, of course, is better because you're closer to the Lord, whereas those who have karma, Mr. Bhakti said, basically they meditate on the Lord and they feel very happy doing that, and they got their sarupya, they got the spiritual body and all the opulence and all the wealth and the palaces and everything around. They're very happy doing that. And the Shantara, those who are Gyanis, of course, they don't want what mixture of Jnana and Jnana Mr. Bhakti, they don't prefer the other rasas because the other rasas are more disturbing in one sense. You will see, like, for instance, in Madhurya rasa, there's extremes of emotion. Whereas Jnanis, they want peace. So therefore, the Jnana Mr. Bhakti prefers a very peaceful relationship. That's what he gets, Shanta rasa. A very, very calm type of thing. Whereas you'll find that the gopis are always completely distressed. Of course, it's spiritual, but they don't relish that so much. They want something very, very. Their realization of Krishna is there, and they can even sometimes see Krishna, not so much. But it's a very, let's say, calm relationship with him. Well, when we're doing bhakti, because we do have the knowledge of what is pure bhakti, we're not classified as this. If you look at this description of the bhakti covered by Tamaguna, etc., they're quite quite primitive bhaktas, we could say, in one sense. You know, their understanding of bhakti is very little. So these type of people, the tamasic and rajasic especially, are quite primitive. And the sattva-gun bhakti is something more like nishkama karma yoga, with offering everything to the Lord. So it's not actually direct. So the devotee who's got knowledge of what is pure bhakti, yes, he may be affected by the gunas, but we don't call that tamagun bhakti or whatever. The Vedas manifest. Well, the Vedas are eternal and eternal sound, so they never really change. They always manifest. Even after destruction, they come out again in another universe. It's the same Vedas, same sounds. Of course, due to time, we may have parts lost or whatever, or maybe corruptions here now, but nevertheless, the Vedas are actually eternal. So they always manifest in the same form in different universes, and then when the universe is destroyed and created, it's always the same. So this is the distinction of Vedas from Puranas. Puranas may change or whatever, but Vedas always remain the same. Shruti. Vedas, Upanishads, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, they're all considered permanent.
Somebody spoke about bhakti and his goal is to achieve pure love. And somehow or other, he did not achieve that in this lifetime.
Yeah.
And he got enough bhakti to be able to go to Vaikuntha Raja. What happened? Did he go to Vaikuntha Raja and Goloka, or come back to Earth?
Oh, no. Well, if you can't get prema, you can't even go to Goloka, or to Vaikuntha. You need prema to go to Vaikuntha. In general, of course, if you're karma, Mr. Bhakta. You go to Vaikuntha if you worship Vishnu, you go to Goloka if you worship Krishna. So Vaikuntha and Goloka are both prema levels in general. Or of course you get Shantarasa also, the Gyanrasa Bhakta. But if you don't get prema and you're in a lower stage, then you take another birth and you continue your practice. If you're doing sadhana, then you continue your sadhana. If you're in bhava, you continue from there to get prema, as in the case of Bharat. Bharat was in bhava stage. But then previously sometime, I don't know what lifetime, he had some little offense, so that caused him to become attracted to the deer. And therefore, he became a deer in the next lifetime. But it was an arrangement of the Lord so that he would understand that, you know, his fault. So therefore, he has memory of that at the same time. So he remembered in that lifetime, he should not become attracted to a deer again. So therefore, next lifetime, he was very careful not to become attracted to anything in the material world. And he got to prema on that stage. So even in bhava, it took him 3 lifetimes. But he had to stay until he got to that level. So you don't go out to Vaikuntha and come back down and go back up again like that. Then you would fall from the spiritual world. Prema?
Yes.
Not a karma, Mr. Bhakta. Or it's kind of a type of weak Shantarasa, which we don't really include in prema because there's no service there really. So in one sense, yes, it's included in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sundu, but it's not really, you know, Bhakti Rasamrita in one sense, because it's no real service. And whatever, if we call it prema, it is a very weak type of prema. So it's generally not considered on the same level as Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. Which one? Four types of Gyanis. Well, there's a little controversy what the Gyani is. If he's an impersonalist Gyani, of course, that can't be because these are types of Bhaktas. So they're not. So he could be a Gyan Mr. Bhakta, or it could be just a Bhakta who has full knowledge of the Lord. It could be either way. So different acharyas have different interpretation there. Okay? But if it's like a Gyan Mr. Bhakta, going from a Karma Mr. Bhakta to a Gyan Mr. Bhakta, then it says later, then finally he achieves, you know, pure bhakti in the context of the other verses following. So then it could mean he's again Mr. Bhakti, who then becomes a pure bhakti eventually.
But knowledge would imply, at least in relationship with bhakti, an understanding of devotional service.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about those who come to him.
Yeah. Or it could be again Mr. Bhakta also. So there's 2 interpretations there. One is again Mr. Bhakta, one is just a Bhakta who has good knowledge of bhakti. Okay. Hare Krishna.